Just curling brings out the bros, you know. Big time. Bros and hoes. Welcome to another edition of the Beer Opinions Podcast. Recording here live at Kaiser Tiger. I am Pat Berger, owner of Kaiser Tiger, and Patty Longs. And with me, as always, is Bruce White from the Chicagoland Beer Tours. Bruce, how you doing?
Hey, doing well. You know, celebrated a big, had a big weekend last weekend. You know,
it certainly was.
Yeah, it was my birthday.
That too.
Which is the day after St. Patrick's Day, which is really what was the big celebration.
Same with my youngest son.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Born under a bad sign.
Yeah.
Bruce's birthday. Yikes.
I'm usually like, hey, anybody want to go get a beer? And people are like, no, leave me alone. You know, like I had a big day yesterday.
Yes.
It's time to.
It's also Eddie Wigonick's birthday. You remember Eddie?
Yeah.
From awesome. Three Floyds.
All right.
And he asked me to go to Whirly Ball. And I was like, what are you turning, 12? Was laser tag like sold out? What are we doing?
I think they have laser tag.
I think they do. Yeah.
I'm going. Like,
anyway, enough of that. We have a guest with us, Jason Klein, co-founder of Spiteful Brewing. Jason, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Sorry for not hitting reply all on the last episode. Jason was supposed to be here with Michael Roper to talk about tap rooms. And, you know, as people who, you know, frequently listen to this podcast, all three of you, you know that I am not technically sound and, you know, I don't know what I'm doing on the computers. But thank you for coming. And, you know, it's a pleasure to have you here.
No, sorry I missed last week, but happy to be here today.
Yeah. So we wanted to get a little rundown on Spiteful because, you know, you guys have made a big jump recently. You've gone from very tiny, nano, I think would be what the kids call it. And now you've got this new space. I got to visit. It is beautiful. Nice tap room with a fairly large production brewery in the back. What is the, you know, give us a little rundown on the brew house and all that kind of stuff and you know, all the details of your new baby.
Sure. So the new one is a 30-barrel brew house, and we have 60-barrel fermenters. We have three primaries and one bright, so we're kind of easing into it, so to speak. We went big on the brew house, bigger than, you know, maybe some people taking that next jump go, but we did that primarily to keep everything on one shift. And we know we're obviously hoping to be around for a long time. So we'd like to grow into the brew house. You generally hear breweries that buy brew houses and 3 years later, they're looking to get a bigger one or add on. So we're trying to have the long view there. And it's worked out really well. It's a Sprinkman system. So made right over the border, and across the cheddar curtain there. And, which is great because if anyone knows beer, it's Wisconsin. Yeah. And, it's nice to have them so close and be kind of involved in checking on the system. And, you know, you pick up the phone and they answer, and they're not far if something goes wrong. So, really happy with the system.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's no complaints.
Any, trepidation going, you know, from what you were to what you are now in this particular environment?
No, I would say no, because when we started in our tiny nano brewery, it was always a stepping stone or proof of concept. So we always wanted to get to where we are. It took longer than we had originally thought it would. But a lot of that has to do with finding the right building. There's not every building out there is really a good fit for a brewery. There's not a lot out there with the high ceilings that you need and the space that you need. So that it took longer, but we always wanted to get there. So we never really considered what the market was like today because we always wanted just to get to where we are. It was always part of the plan.
Cool. Let's go back in the way back machine, the hot tub time machine. And why don't you tell us about the very beginnings of Spiteful? Yeah, we need some coasters. Huh? Every time we put down our beer, makes a nice, the reverb is on. You know, why don't you give us a little history, you and your partners, you know, or partner, you know, how you guys came together and what made you want to start a brewery?
Sure. So I started it with Brad Schaefer, and who I knew from childhood. We actually met playing hockey on the pond when we were about nine. And then we ended up reconnecting in high school, playing on the same team. He went to the same college as me for a year and then transferred to Boulder. This is where actually he got exposed to good beer, because I certainly was drinking Keystone Light. fast forward a little bit, I'm back in Chicago, and he had moved back here and was trying to figure out what he wanted to do. He knew that I was looking to get out of what I was doing. So we looked at starting a business together, and then actually looked at a bar initially.
How old were you guys?
That was about 9 years ago, 10 years ago, so mid-20s.
Yeah.
25.
Young, right?
Yeah. Young and not that smart, maybe, which we figured out quickly that running a bar is not something you can just kind of do as a proof of concept. There's no model for proof of concept. You do it or you don't. Mm-hmm. And we knew quite a bit about being on one side of the bar and nothing on the other side. So it was more, we figured out quickly that, number one, it costs a lot to start a bar. And number two, we probably aren't the right people to do this.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, I want to open a bar, what should I do? And my response is always the same: go get a job in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then work that job for maybe like 10 years, really make sure you like it, learn the ins and outs, and then decide whether or not you want to open a bar. And they're like, what? Wait, I don't want to wait 10 years. I don't want to work at a bar for 10 years. Well, then probably shouldn't open one.
Maybe don't. Don't own one.
And I feel like everybody's like, you love going to the bar when you're on the other side, like you said. And then as soon as, when it becomes a job, it's still fun, but it's a lot more, it's totally different.
Yeah. It's a lot different than having, your elbow on the other side of the bar.
Yeah.
It's, there really isn't anything, they're not similar in any way, shape or form, really.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm glad we didn't go down that path. We did some quick back of the napkin math, and it's an incredible amount of startup capital even to open up a small place. So, and the risk and the insurance and not having the industry know-how. Brad worked in the service industry, but not from a management and running a bar standpoint. So we kind of were figuring out, what are we passionate about? If we're not going to do that, what do we pivot to? And he had recently introduced me to good beer, being from Boulder. He was always drinking the nice stuff, and we'd always be like, why are you drinking that? And he would just be, take the heat from all of us drinking our Miller Lights. But slowly, we figured it out. And like most people that get introduced to craft beer, right, it's the same story. You're like, oh, what is this? This is really great. And then you want to drink more of it. And it turned into something that we were both passionate about. I have a manufacturing background, so for me, being able to get back to that type of a work was exciting. So we said, let's open up a microbrewery. And this was 2009,
mm-hmm.
2008. So the scene looked very different.
It sure did. You had
Metro, Half Acre, and Rock Bottom. I think that's
Revolution,
it.
Maybe?
Not even yet.
Not even, huh?
Not even yet. So they were obviously there. Haymarket was in planning. Mm-hmm. Pipeworks was in planning. But I don't think that those guys, a bunch of us were in planning, but like Rev and Haymarket were obviously much closer to opening, and they were more than just planning. They were, I think, building at the time. But there wasn't a lot of information about what was going on at that time. Not like today. You didn't have the blogs and all that list all the breweries and planning and everything going on. So it seemed
the list was a lot smaller. You could actually keep track of it back then. Now, I mean, good luck keeping track of it. It's I can't. It's my job.
Yeah, no, I don't envy that. No clue what's going on as far as statewide, much less Chicago.
Yeah.
It's a job just to keep track of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the Hop Review and some of these blog guys drinking beer, they keep track of it, and I think it is a full-time job. Like, they have to go in and update their website weekly.
All the time.
It's just crazy.
No doubt.
Yeah.
And you had your two brothers in the suburbs and whatnot. There's a few sprinkled out there, but even the suburbs was not a lot happening. Mm-hmm. So to us, it seemed like a great opportunity. Like, there's this momentum that's building everywhere but Chicago, it seemed like, for craft beer, and there was a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, I think there was. And, I think, especially with this expansion that you've just done, you guys have benefited greatly from having your name out there for a while and, been able to build up that reputation that, enables you to make that next step,
Tremendously helpful. I don't know how else. I would be very nervous entering the market with a 30-barrel system without having the foundation we built over the last 5 years and change.
Yeah, I think it makes all the difference because there's a lot of people who are entering the market with no reputation and 30 barrel systems.
Yeah, it's
it's hard out there.
It's a lot of beer
for a pimp, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's but so we had this great idea. What,
trying to make the money for the rent. That won an Academy Award.
That works.
That
works.
Just that so one you know. Snuck up on me. I got to wake up here. That was good. That was good.
I guess I've been up since 6 a.m. I'm already going. And my Loyola's playing tonight, so I'm already priming myself with this wonderful Doppelbach from Spiteful.
Yeah, this is fantastic, by the way. Thanks for bringing this. Yeah.
Thank you. It's our first Doppelbach, first lager, really, that was brewed. It wasn't the first one we released because that one needed some time. But yeah, we're excited to be able to do that kind of stuff now.
Yeah, because you guys were just like, I mean, it was kind of, take us back to the old brew house. Because the amount of work, the labor that was going in to producing beer out of there, everything was on wheels and,
Still is. Actually, I think we're cutting those off today, finally.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So,
the size of it, it was like a storage locker, right? I mean.
Yeah, it was. So we decided to let's brew beer, and we never brewed a batch, right? So that's also kind of a little bit different than most people. But we figured out, let's get a homebrew kit and like it. You know, you're all in for $120, right? If we don't like it, then we don't pursue this. So for 3 years, we aggressively homebrewed, and we ended up loving it, of course. And we were trying to, so we approached homebrewing very differently than I think a lot of people do. It's not a hobby we had and decided to turn pro. We were like, no, let's open up a brewery and, let's figure out what that takes. So that was a unique 3 years for us.
Yeah.
But we did. So we found a place that was 400 square feet, which is it's actually, I think, smaller than the section of the upstairs that we're in right now.
It definitely is, yeah.
That's small.
It's, yeah, it was. But to be fair, our plan was to get a Sabco, which we did actually eventually get. And we were just going to, proof of concept, right? Brew and get one or two bars and just see if this is something that we get any traction on. Is it something we really want to do? And then we figured out, we could actually, you can't make one person can't support themselves on that system. So it was always going to be tough to do it. So we ended up going with a 3-barrel system, but we had already leased the space. We had 400 square feet to work with, and we jammed our 3-barrel system and 5-barrel fermenter. So we treat it like a 2.5-barrel system, but it's essentially a 3-barrel. And we had 3 5-barrel fermenters and everything else crammed on. We had a loft that we built. So we could put our chest freezer on top of the loft. The grain storage was below it because we had to use every inch. Brad is a master shelf planner and builder. The place was decked out and shelving everywhere. He could turn anybody's garage into the most organized place on the planet. So fortunate for me, because I'm not that guy, that I had a partner that was able to have that vision and execute it. Everything had a home and was in shelves. Everything was hung on walls. It taught us very good habits early on because you couldn't even leave a bucket in the way. It was in the way.
Like, you probably just had to fine tune the ops so that you just had the operations down to an absolute science.
I mean, the hoses had the right curvature on the floor just to stay out of the way. Yeah, it was that nuts. But it worked. everything was on wheels. So our brew house was on wheels, and our canning line was on wheels. And we used to store one out in the hallway because you couldn't do both at the same time. So the space that was occupied by the brew house was the same space that the canning line occupied. You'd be pushing them through a door. We had to make a door 42 inches wide just to get the fermenters in, which gave us about 1/2 inch on either side, which is perfect. So we always joke and called it the brewery of inches because it was. And we ended up, when we were done with that space, there was 12 tanks and a brew house in that 400 square feet. Now, by that time, we had taken over the unit directly next to us, so the loft and the chest freezer and all that stuff was actually in a separate room. That was connected through a doorway, but the original 400 square foot space, we had 7 5-barrels and 5 7-barrels and a brew house in that space. So it was,
man,
it was tight.
That's awesome. That's cool. When was the point when you were like, okay, this is gonna work? Like, was there? Do you remember like a point in time when you were like, oh, this is we can do this?
We always thought we could do it. I guess you have to kind of have that.
Got to go for it.
You have to, I think, to make it and kind of make the leap and quit your job and take the plunge, so to speak. You have to have a sense of of confidence, I think, in order to execute it well.
Yeah, agreed.
So with
almost to the point of stupidity.
Almost, yeah, blind faith, right? Yes, just like it's going to work.
Yep.
You have to have a plan if it doesn't, but you don't think about that plan too much because you hope to never go there.
It's like Batman. You know, you got to take the Dark Knight Rises. You got to take that rope off to... Sorry, guys. I'm going to keep drinking.
You'll get there, Bruce. I'll get there.
A little more Doppelbach, actually. Yeah, yeah. You came in here with something.
No, I mean, I remember opening Patty Long's. Someone said to me, like, well, what if everything goes to shit? What's the plan? I was like, what? Yeah. Things could go to shit? I don't know. That's not in the business plan.
Looking up non-extradition countries, just like being like, you know.
Yeah, that section doesn't, it's not in, I don't know where that section of the business plan is.
Yeah, I left it out.
Oh, exit strategy. No, don't know one of those.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We always believed that it was going to happen. So I don't think there was one point where we were like, wow, this is going to work. We just kind of kept working towards our goal, which was the place we opened up in December. But even in that 400 square foot space, that was our vision. So it was always working towards something. But Pat, you mentioned the amount of labor and work that goes into that. So in a three barrel system,
it's a labor of love, right?
It was. I mean, I would mash in with Brad in the morning when it was just two of us. And then I'd go deliver beer and I'd come back and mash in the second turn. It was two turns to fill a tank and then go back out. And I mean, that's how we survived. It was because, you know, Brad, we ended up dividing and conquering because you have to, with two people. But we made it work and we self-distributed for about 5 years, almost 5 years, which was great. And we slowly added employees. And, at one point we were five people out of that space, canning our own beer, delivering our own beer. So it was great. And it taught us, it made us who we are as a company. I think, we learned a lot about ourselves and about what it takes to actually make it, and the dedication and the grind. Cause it's a grind.
It is.
It's not easy. And I would imagine it's not just brewing, right? It's anytime you do your own business, it's a bit of a grind. Nothing's easy. If it was easy, everybody would do it.
Mm-hmm.
True.
That's awesome. Yeah. I was reading that the name Spiteful, which is, I think it's one of the better brewery names. It's just very memorable. But it was like something because you and Brad like to kind of,
we're spiteful people.
Spiteful people.
I mean, there's no really other way around it. That's how we are with our friends. That's how we were growing up. I mean, playing hockey with people, like any sport, right? You have a lot of that that goes on, and like we're ball breakers, and that's just how our culture of friendship has always been. And someone early on told us the company needs to be about ourselves, and it was the best advice we ever got. And I really wish I could remember exactly who told me that, and I don't, but. That made a lot of our planning easier because there's a lot of things you try to force, especially you're writing a business plan, right? And I never wrote a business plan before. And you've got the books and the worksheets and you're trying to fit into these examples of what people say you should be doing. And it was very hard. We hit wall after wall. And finally we're like, no, let's just make this about us. And my business plan wasn't 20 pages. You don't need a 20-page business plan for a three-barrel system.
No one's going to read 20 pages.
I didn't want to write 20 pages.
Right, yeah.
Financial projections, we need to sell it all. That's the projection. Everything has to sell.
I mean, even the bank, when you hand this thing to the bank, you're trying to get some money. Trust me, those bankers aren't going to read 20 pages.
No.
You know, they need it in their face, five pages tops. And, you know, that's my advice anyway.
I agree. We wrote this one for ourselves. So that was the other nice thing about the way we started was that we was self-funded, right? Our rent was a parking spot every month for 400 square feet. It was $450 a month or $500 a month when we started. So the risk wasn't that high. We bought our brewing equipment, which wasn't that expensive at the time. Brad and I were able to self-fund everything, but it was small. So we had zero overhead. We just had ourselves. So it was a low-risk way to get into the brewing industry without taking on the bank loans and having to write that bigger business plan and get other people involved.
And, you know, when you're small and you make mistakes, which everyone does, they're small mistakes just by the nature of being small. And it's a nice way to learn whatever business you're in, you're going to make mistakes. And if you're huge, they're huge mistakes,
Yeah.
We threw everything against the wall at Patty Long's the first year, just trying to see what would stick and, my favorite might have been the redneck bingo that we did. That was That was a mistake.
Really?
Yeah, that was a big mistake. Yeah. But, you know, no one noticed because no one had noticed Patty Longs yet. Yeah, so we just, you know.
Didn't make the news or anything for that.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't even mention it. Never happened.
No, there's comfort in that, though, where you don't, like Brad and I didn't have the pressure of loans and or investors. Yep. It was just us. So, and then once that changed when we hired our first employee, then all of a sudden it became very, very real and responsibilities felt different.
Yeah.
But we couldn't do it, the two of us anymore. And we were actually just excited that we were at the point where, hey, we can afford to hire somebody.
Right.
I mean, something's going right.
Yeah, yeah.
About the same time, we had switched to from the bomber-only model, which is very common for breweries our size. It's really the only way to survive. But we've switched to cans pretty early on, knowing that that's where we wanted to be. And it's a good thing we did because it turns out it takes three people at least to run the canning line we bought on. So that timing was great.
So you had a canning line in there too?
Oh, yeah. It was also on wheels.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, the canning line, actually Corridor has it now. It's a great little unit. It's a two-head filler that we would literally fill one by one, and then the next guy would put the pieces together and seam them, and then you'd have a guy floating that basically was depalletizing the empties and sanitizing them and rinsing them and then also palletizing the full ones. So that guy was busy. And then we also had to label them and then six-pack them, but that would happen offline. It wasn't until we were able to get more employees that we could actually do that all at once.
In the early stages, how many hours a day were you kind of working at this, just to kind of put things in perspective?
It varied, but no less than 8. Well, I guess in the very beginning, we would actually go, we'd have some free time. He only had 3 primaries. Sure. But we spent most of our free time building stuff for the brewery, or, you know, figuring this out or that out. And so physically at the brewery, you're probably there 8 to 10 hours at a minimum every day. I mean, even still, it's like that. But then there's always something else to do and mm-hmm. something else to plan, or you're working from home and I feel like that's probably anyone that has their own business, whether it's a retail store, a bar or a brewery, that's, you just kind of live it.
Yeah.
There's 12 to 15 hour days too. Like if we're triple batching some of our bigger beers, we had the triple batch. Those were shitty days.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no other way to do it. Right. So,
and if you're counting the hours, you're probably in trouble.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Like people used to ask me, well now, now they ask me and I'm like a lot less than I used to. So, I try not to count now either because I'll feel guilty.
Yeah, but no, it's not something we ever really talk like.
But back in the day, people would ask me, I'd be like, man, I don't even know. I don't want to know, because that'll just, that'll work on your brain in the wrong way.
Oh, yeah. No, you just, like, there were many, many days that were dark to dark, mm-hmm. Because we would show up and, especially on a packaging day when you're packaging cans one by one, even if it's a 5-barrel tank, that takes a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got to clean it all up, and then you got to wheel the canning line out and wheel the brew house back in so you're ready to brew tomorrow. And at the end of our run there, we were brewing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, packaging Monday, Tuesday, and it was every week exactly the same. We, number one, couldn't afford to have any sort of flex in that because we had to generate the revenue to keep going. So we needed the volume. We couldn't make a lager, couldn't never make a Doppelbach and tie up a tank for 8 weeks. It just didn't work for us. So we became kind of a mini factory in a way, which was good because it helps bring that mentality of production into our company culture, but also not great because that's not what you think of when you think of a microbrewery. We were so rigid and so regimented on our routine that it loses some of its, I don't know if excitement's the right word, but it's very monotonous.
Yeah.
And you just have to know that that's what you're doing. Now that we actually still have our 3-barrel brew house. Now we have both. So we get to make fun stuff like this, and we have the production side of things, but we have the fun side of things as well. So it that kind of worked out to our favor.
Great. Yeah.
What was the most barrels you guys got out of that, the original 3-barrel brew house?
800 barrels.
800 barrels?
Yeah.
It was your peak year there?
Feet. Yeah. Yeah. And that was it.
I thought it was going to be a lot less than that. That's a lot.
Yeah.
We out were, of there.
Yeah. And poor Calvin, I think, delivered all 800 barrels of that. Because by that point, I had stopped delivering and had to shift to kind of work on growth and whatever else was happening at the brewery.
How many are you projecting this year? Do you have any idea?
It'll be probably 2,500.
Okay.
Which is for us a massive jump. Still a drop in the bucket when you talk about larger breweries, but for us, that's huge.
And it's a 300% increase,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So it's, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little daunting at times, but.
You guys have had, I think, a great buzz about you from day one. I mean, I certainly heard about it. Even though I couldn't get the beer myself, people were talking about Spiteful and, I was excited to try it. I think the first time I tried it was at a tasting at the Beer Temple, at the original Beer Temple store. Are you still finding it, people are excited about the brand and like opening up accounts like Kaiser Tiger and Patty Long's? You know, we do get the beer now, which is great. Is every drop going out the door?
At this point, every drop is basically going out the door.
Yeah.
Because we've done it slow.
Yeah.
But we haven't, we don't have that much tank space even now. So
do you have a salesman on the street?
Calvin,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Calvin's turned from delivery/sales into full on sales, and he's done an amazing job at it. And he's been with us for a while, and before that he was with Goose, so he's grown up in the industry, so to speak, and he's seen it from the AB side, and then of course from our side when we were in a 400 square foot room. So he's got a very good feeling for what's going on out there. But and then I'll get out there and do what I can, but with the opening of the tap room and running the other side of everything, it gets hard for me to get out as much as I'd like to. But yeah, I think thank you for being patient, by the way. We were 93% package, to give you an idea of what.
Which made sense, right? And I think Pipeworks did the same thing. When you're self-distributing, especially, and the same guy who's bringing us that beer is the same guy making it and the same guy packaging it and all that, it must take a huge load off to just be able to take that to three or four places and be like, we're done, let's get back to making beer. And, that's certainly what Pipeworks said. Pipeworks could have just dropped it all off at Benny's, but, they did spread it around to a few, key craft accounts at the beginning. And, and you guys, I think, kind of did the same model, and most of it was Bomber bottles, right?
Bomber bottles primarily, mm-hmm. until about almost a year in, we switched to cans. Well, we did both because we couldn't switch only to cans. We would have gone under.
Yeah.
Because you just don't make anything on cans when you compare it to Bombers, unless you have volume, right? It's a trade-off.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference there?
Oh, it's probably 30%.
Just from what you can charge for a Bomber compared to a can? Or yeah. Like, where's the money difference?
Yeah, it's on what your revenue per ounce is, because you're charging, between $8 to $12 on a Bomber, right? Depending on what it is.
Yeah.
For 22 ounces. If you try to apply that to cans, good luck selling any. You're selling a six pack, which is 264 ounces for $9.99.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and even if you do the four pack,
and that's retail pricing, right? So that's not even what we're charging.
Yeah.
So
everyone complained about the price of Bombers. They were right.
We're always right. That's why. But we also learned it depends on what you're putting in the Bomber, right? So we still do Bombers.
Yeah. The high ABV, the specialty.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a time and a place for it, right? Uh-huh. I mean, we learned early on that we had a pale ale and a Bomber, and we're like, well, that didn't go as well as we thought it was going to go. But why would it? Why would anyone pay $9 for our Alley Time pale ale and a Bomber when we turn around and put it in cans and charge $9.99 for it? We couldn't keep it on the shelf. So you have to understand what the beer is and what container it goes in. And there's, like I said, a time and a place. Like, Bombers are great. Like, I still love them for what beers we put in there. And now that we have the big production brewery, mm-hmm. in the tap room, we can be very picky as to what we put in Bombers, and it makes sense to us. What would we as customers pay for in a Bomber?
Yeah.
Don't force it.
Yeah.
I feel like Bombers, the market share went way down or has decreased over time. But I feel like there's going to be a resurgence at some point when, people take them to dinner. They share them. I mean, there is a bombers have a utilitarian use in the right circumstance.
It seems like that whole wine model with bombers. I agreed with you, and I keep waiting for it to happen, but it doesn't. Seem like that works.
It doesn't. Yeah. It hasn't happened yet. So I'm just saying.
I don't think it's gonna happen. I think bombers are kind of dead. You know, and I'm a big fan of, you know, the bigger the beer, the smaller the receptacle. You know, way back in the day, like old Foghorn and stuff came in little tiny bottles, and that made sense to me. You're drinking a 12% beer, might as well get an 8-ounce bottle of it. Obviously, I think that's hard to make money on as well. You know, it's consumer. The consumer brain works in a strange way. It's not always logic. But bombers never made a lot of sense to me. I think a lot of their appeal was trading online to send, you know, because you instead of sending a 6-pack, you were sending, you know, one bottle in the mail. I don't know. I never did the trading online thing, but it certainly was never a sell at any of my bars. We can't sell bombers to save our lives. And at Patty Long's, we never could.
I don't know any on-premise account that does do it. I mean, maybe there's some, but I don't think you could apply your standard markup on that and expect to sell any.
No. I mean, it's. No. For a little while, Dreadnought bombers sold. Yeah, for a short, you know, a hot second. And then even those didn't move. And it was like, oh, I'm not carrying any more bombers.
Yeah.
If I can't sell a 3 Floyds and a bomber, I'm not carrying anymore. But, you know.
It's part of what pushed us to Kansas early as it did.
Yeah,
Because it was, again, it was just Brad and myself at that time. And so we were making bombers. And we got to a point where you had to either increase your footprint geographically or change the container to keep selling the same amount of beer. Mm-hmm. And what we made the choice to change the container because it was just the two of us and we were barely being able to make deliveries as it was. So we always wanted to go to cans anyways. So for us, that's what made sense. But we were at that point where we were going to have to just double the account base to sell to keep selling all the beer.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Pat's refilling us.
This Doppelbock is really good, by the way.
I'm glad you guys like it. Yeah.
Sorry, it's
got you going like
there's yeah, just there's pouring another round, you know, trying to get Bruce into the conversation. Yeah. That's all.
Yeah.
See, this beer, this would be a tough sell in a bomber.
Yeah,
this is a great example of a beer that's its higher ABV. Mm-hmm. It will last for a very long time in the bottle, but. Are you going to get someone to pay $9.99 for a bomber or this? I don't know. We're not going to find out because we're not doing it. But that's the conversation we have internally is, does this make sense for the consumer? Because if it doesn't, it's just going to sit on the shelf. I mean, you guys have all been to, you know, your liquor stores these days, and it's massive, the amount of choice in bombers. And we don't want our stuff sitting on shelves. The retailer doesn't want our stuff sitting on shelves.
So we're
finally in a position where we don't have to we're not tied to the package like we were. That was tough for a while, just trying to figure out what is that magic number of bombers we need to keep the lights on, and then what the hell are we going to set? What are we going to make? And we've done over 107 different beers, and that's not because that's what we necessarily wanted to do. We had to do it.
And I was going to say, so you ended up with three kind of your mainstream beers, right? Like your key beers. Is that right?
We had four.
Four? Okay.
When we got bigger, we dropped that to three.
Okay.
Because we couldn't keep up with all of it. And then there's also the issue of hops. And Simcoe is one of those that was not easy to get on a large scale. And mm-hmm. that was in our Alley Time Pale Ale. So we kind of had to make a choice. We did not want to change the recipe and then call it Alley Time and put something else in there. So we dropped that. We will have a pale ale at some point come back in, and we're actually going to do our Spiteful Lager that'll become a year round. So we'll be back up to four this spring.
Cool.
But it was primarily those were the core.
Spiteful Lager, you say? Yeah.
Spiteful Lager.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, I would have brought you some, but we ran out. it was a very popular beer in the tap room, so we decided to scale it up and include it. We actually have a large batch going, but it wasn't quite ready, so I didn't want to bring in process beer. It's a lower ABV, just a clean kind of crisp finish, which a lot of our beers tend to do that. It's a pretty simple malt bill. just some Pilsen malt, and we ferment it and with a common yeast, actually. So, yeah, it's just, and we use a experimental German hop that has like a nice lemon quality to it.
Okay.
And it's, yeah, we loved it. We
sounds nice.
We made it in the tap room. It was doing well, so we said, let's make more of this.
It's obvious,
the people
smart.
Have spoken.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's finally the year of the lager.
It is. Yeah.
I've been saying it for 10 years, but yeah. I was wrong until now.
Well, yeah.
Figured if I just kept saying it, eventually I'd be right.
Well, it worked. Yeah. It was also the quickest beer to go in the brewery kegerator, so. Which makes sense because it's, you know,
you're working, you want to light something refreshing and light. Yeah.
It's 4.7. So it's, you know, it's perfect for that
kind
of thing.
It's amazing people actually, you know, want to drink beers that are easy to drink. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's why it's funny. People ask me, why did you guys finally do it? And it's like, well, we couldn't do it before. And, and they're like, well, it's the number one settling style of beer in the world for a reason.
By a lot.
And now we didn't make a Pilsner. There's a lot of that out there and people are executing that well. So we wanted to do something just a little different. But yeah, people want
There's
lager.
A lot of people not executing the Pilsner well too. So, you know, I'm glad. I wish more people would just slap lager on the label too. Cause it's like, they want to put Pilsner on there and it's a specific thing. You know?
Should be. Yeah. Right. If you're going to call it that, it should match that. For the most part.
Right.
The only time that seems to get blurred is the IPA pale, session IPA, strong pale, double IPA.
It's all over the place.
Yeah. Right. So that one I think has a little bit of room, but certainly something like a Pilsner or a Doppelbach, there's not a lot of room for experimenting there. It's nope, this is what it should
be. That's the style. Yeah.
I agree.
And then you have the other beers, the Spiteful IPA, which is great. Right. I mean, that's and then the Pigeon Porter. Is it the
goddamn Pigeon Porter?
Goddamn Pigeon Porter.
that was
when I saw on the shelf. Pretty jumped out at me.
That's a good one that we actually can the original, but we do bombers for variations. So we have a maple coming out. There's vanilla that we did.
Yeah.
We're doing a fudge soon. We've done, I think, 10 or 11 different variations. Chocolate peanut butter. Just weird.
I've had
to just try it.
Yep, that's a good one. The chocolate peanut butter one. I've had that.
It's one of my favorites, actually. Yeah, and the Willy Wonka theme label.
Yeah,
was one of my favorite labels that that Luke created for us. But yeah, that's kind of the fun. Like we have the core beer, and then we get we take all the late hopping out of it, and then add whatever weird shit we come up with into the beer, and without being too crazy, right? Like chocolate peanut butter, I think is about. No, I take that back. Peanut butter and jelly was the most out there that we got, which was just fresh raspberries and the peanut butter. Oddly worked. I think it
sounds good
well,
to me.
But
yeah, I like the peanut butter beers out of the market. There's there's a bunch of good ones.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun. It's not a fun ingredient to clean.
I can imagine.
But it tastes good.
Does the oil mess, like the oil in the peanut butter, does that?
So we use dehydrated peanut butter.
Okay.
And that is the only way I would do it.
Yeah,
I would imagine the oil would destroy any head retention.
That's what I was going to say,
think about retaining. So, and it's easy because it's nice and powder and you just...
Just dump it in.
Dump it in, basically, yeah. Well, we rehydrate it and then dump it in.
And then dump it in, yeah.
So, but it works.
Cool.
It's not that good at home. I tried it at home and I'd rather just have peanut butter.
Yeah.
But if you're not, you know, if you're making a peanut butter and jelly, I don't think you want to mix powdered peanut butter with water and have it that
way.
Yeah,
my wife was on some weird diet and had it at home. It was not peanut butter.
No. It's close, but not if you're expecting to have that nice consistency on your sandwich. But it works in beer.
That's awesome.
Are you guys, because I know Bruce wants to bring this up, but are you guys making any juicy IPAs? The newest BA style?
There's nothing on the production schedule that comes close to that style. That's all I'll say about that.
It made me so happy to see that. I had to tag you right away.
I got in trouble this morning on Facebook because I opened my big mouth. And there was a thread of brewers. So now, for those of you listening, the Brewers Association has officially designated a new category of hazy IPAs. And the thread on this Facebook post was like, it was a bunch of brewers worried that their beer would settle out at GABF because you got to send it a couple weeks earlier. I mean, I guess that's just the world we're living in now. This is Trump's America now, people, you know. Brewers are worried about their beer turning clear before the judges. And, you know, one brewer who I have a back and forth with all the time with this was like, you know, people that don't know the style shouldn't judge it and all that. And I said, that's fine. I'm going to recuse myself just like Jeff Sessions in the Russian investigation because you're right. I should not be judging that. Yeah, that category of beer.
I mean, we were.
You can't fail everyone, Pat. You gotta, you know.
Tastes like orange juice. One star. If I could give it zero, I would.
So
like,
yeah,
it's supposed to taste like orange juice. What?
Yeah. Well, then just have a screwdriver. Yeah, we don't make them. I guess you can never say never, but Brad and I are fairly strong with our opinions on that style. I don't enjoy drinking them, and I appreciate them for what they are, but to me, that's not what beer should taste like, so we're not going down that route.
I have sold a few, and you know, they mostly get snuck in because the maker just calls it an IPA. And you know, a lot of these beers are just IPAs. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. It's a lot of IPAs are hazy, you know.
They are. We work hard to make ours the opposite of that. But yeah, no, they can be, right? Because you're dry hopping, you're going to throw some haze in there. And
yeah, it happens. But you know, there's a difference between the haze and like a chowdery beer or like a beer that looks like a chocolate milk. Yeah, or you know.
I mean, is there anything more beautiful than a crystal clear beer with like a nice head of foam on it in a glass?
Not in my opinion.
No.
I will say that I do like the New England style, so I'm not, or the hazy style. So I did meet my limit with the glitter beer. Have you guys seen this?
I've only heard of it. And I thought it was a joke. I
thought it was a joke, but it's pushed me to my. That's my limit. I realized it. No glitter beer. I'm saying it here.
I just want to know if it's glittery coming out.
It's not. I saw.
What's the fun in that?
Yeah, right. Because basically, there's an ingredient.
It took me a second to get there. So, if that was the case, then maybe that would be worth it.
So, interesting.
For those of you that don't know, you can add. Apparently, brewers are starting to add this. It's like an edible glitter to their beer. So the hazy IPA. It's usually, I think, in a hazy IPA too. So it looks super glittery. And
might as well make me more disgusted with everything.
But wow, but it's caught. You know, it's the Instagram generation. So it goes around. And it freaks me out. I just can't.
That's the same thing with that whole boss pour that was going on. It's right. Like, why are you filling your beer up like that?
Yeah, put a head on it.
I never understood that. Right. Why would you do that?
Right. For a while, I thought any IPAs were supposed to be flat too, and I was like, you know, that's not great. But they're not. They're carbonated, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then people pour them without a head. What are you doing?
If I see a beer without a head on it, I feel like either. Something's wrong with the glass. Something's wrong with the beer. Something's wrong.
Yeah, I feel disappointment.
Yeah,
yeah.
I like seeing that. Nice.
Insist on foam.
Always.
Yes.
Always.
Agreed. Well, I'm glad we got that.
We settled
out of the way.
Get off of our lawns.
No, I know, and I the same argument I've made too. People that come out of the gate and say that I want to make IPAs, right? You could say, why do you hate money?
You're right.
Because it was the most popular style for years and still is, I think, still is.
I think so. Well, craft style, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Craft style. Yeah. And so you could turn that argument against me and say, well, New England IPAs are selling so well, why would you not make it? But I think we're at the point in our business now where we can choose to not make a style if we don't want to. And
right.
We're not driven by necessarily... Just because it's going to make money is not ever why I want to make a beer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I, you know, I have very good friends making this beer and making money on it, and I'm very happy for them. You know, and it's just beer, people. So, you know, some people get really upset at me because I don't like this style. It's like, you know, I'm a 44-year-old man, and I'm allowed to not like a certain kind of beer. It's allowed. I'm allowed. I'm allowed.
I think
to,
you should be allowed to have an opinion on that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm allowed to rail against it and voice my opinion on it. And after all, it's just beer, isn't it?
It is just beer.
Yeah.
How has the transition been with the move?
Move's been great, yeah. Right? So it was a little, it's always going to be scary when you scale up, especially so going from a 3 to a 30 barrel, it's obviously a magnitude of 10, right? And it's like, well, is this going to work? And we were very happy with the way our recipe scaled up and tasted. we had people that didn't know which batch they were drinking.
You don't just times it all by 10, right? You have to, there's, no, are I mean, there equations? I don't know.
There's a little bit of that, a little black magic, little, at least our experience, right? Like you do plug it into the computer and it does spit something out, but then you have, but the computer doesn't necessarily know, well, how efficient is the system going to be? And that's where Sprinkman was great by saying, here's what you really should expect. So I worked with them to kind of figure out the recipes and fine tune them from that equation. Mm-hmm. And we were very happy. People could not tell when we, because we didn't necessarily go say, that's the new batch, right? Because you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. We would give it to people, and then Brad and I are just kind of like sitting there watching them. Are they going to notice? Because it's easy for us to say we don't notice, but we're biased as shit, right?
Yeah.
We know exactly what's going on, and we know which beer is which. We try to do things in a brewery where only one person knows, and we do that a lot with flavor evaluation and whatnot, especially if we're doing like a coffee beer. Unfortunately, it's usually me that knows what's going on. I never get to partake in the blind side of it, but we're starting to rotate that a little bit. But everybody gets 4 glasses, and they don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's neat that you still have the old system, so you can really compare direct from that.
We could still make it on that system and see if anyone notices. Mm-hmm. And we like where we're at. Nobody, I think it actually got better. But a lot of that I think has to do with our packaging's better, right? So instead of filling them by hand and the variable being who's sitting in the filling chair, we have a bigger canning line that's automated and consistent. So if there's an issue, we can actually fix it and determine where it is, which we never... People were like, well, what's your DO levels in your beer? And I'm like, it doesn't matter because we fill them by hand. And no matter who's sitting there, they're not going to put the can. It's you're going to be a little bit different. There's variation. But now we can take that data and actually matters and increase our shelf life, increase some of the hop presence and the pop and the aroma. So I think our beer's definitely gotten better. But if no one notices that, that's fine. I'd rather that be the case than someone saying, well, this tastes different on the new system. And we haven't had any of that to my knowledge.
How is the tap room been going so far? Like, and what have you kind of pros and cons so far?
It's interesting. So we wanted to open a bar, right? When we first wanted to open up our
you got your bar now.
We got one now. But no, it's been amazing. We've never been able to have direct interaction with people drinking our beer outside of festivals, which, you know, with the small staff that there's still only 9 of us. Actually, we just hired our 9th person to help behind the bar when we're busy. So that's still not a lot of people. So festivals, we would do them, but not that often. We did what we could, but that was the only time we were ever in front of people talking about our beer, which is exciting. It's fun for us to do. So it's great to kind of do that and see people's reactions, talk to people about the beer, kind of go through some of the different styles we're able to do, the Doppelbach that we can do, the lager that we did. We have a mild on tap right now. That's like 3.7%, true to style, British dark mild.
I love that stuff.
Yeah. And it's like, we never could do that. Try putting that in a bomber and sell it for $9. So it's been amazing from that standpoint.
Is it selling, the mild?
It is. Yeah. Nice. It is selling. Okay. And we did a cask of it. Over at Own an Engine, because they have their beer engines there.
Burger. Oh, God, I love their burger.
Yeah, I told my wife when we have a 1-year-old, and she's like, I don't think that's the best place for her. I'm like, I don't care. I don't know how long this is going to be on. We have to go get this. I need the burger and the beer.
Yeah.
It didn't. I had to take it.
They're getting ready to open a brewery.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Bixie.
Own an Engine is?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think, is it brew pub or production?
Brew pub.
Brew pub?
Yeah. You know, Bo Fowler is a fantastic chef. She's going to do an Asian fusion food, which sounds, you know.
It sounds great.
Fantastic,
delightful.
Yeah. And they've got a retractable roof. I got a tour.
Holy shit.
Not too long ago.
Where?
Oh, so they're close.
They're on Milwaukee near the Owl.
Logan. Yeah.
In Logan. Yeah. Great location, I think.
Yeah. That'll be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be great. Shout out to Arden Fowler. He's a good friend of mine and gave me a tour not too long ago. It's going to be a beautiful space.
Oh, I can't wait. That'll be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have him on the podcast
right before they
open. So,
yeah. Like stuff like that, the tap room's been amazing for. And we can really, you know, and some of the stuff we can send out actually to keep it interesting. So we have the best of both worlds with a 3 and a 30 barrel system.
Yeah.
You know, we can kind of play around and do whatever we want. which has been great. So I'm really glad we already paid for it, so we might as well keep it. And I'm glad we did, because I don't think the tap room would have really happened without it. Because how many times are you going to go to the tap room for the same four beers?
You
that
need
arrive?
The yeah, beers right. yeah. experimental and or the new varietals coming
I think
out.
So. Yeah. I mean, why would yeah. we not? We've done 107 different beers over the last 5 years. And like now we can make new recipes even. So it was like very exciting for us to utilize that system and continue to utilize that system and then yeah. have the tap room
going. It's basically a pilot system that you can test on real customers and then decide whether or not to make, you know, make production runs.
Yeah.
On it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Is have you now you're up now you moved up to what is it Bowmanville
yeah.
right by the Half Acre Production.
We're fairly close to those guys,
right? Like yeah. yeah, so that's really neat. Be an Empiricals kind of yeah. in that area and some other bar. Obviously, a little south, there's other breweries, but there, that's a great location. I feel like to be in.
Right when I was joking, I say we're kind of close to Half Acre. They're actually across the alley.
There
isn't a closer right. building to us than Half Acre, which has turned out, they actually turned us onto the building because we had reached out in frustration with trying to find a space. And so we talked, and then like a week, I think later, they said, hey, why don't you check out this building? And we were like, we love it. So we're like, are you guys sure? Because like that could get, you know, if you guys are okay with it, we're good with it. And they were great. They've been great to us from the beginning. So
you know, I feel like that's like a both ships rise because then people can go and they can check out both breweries rather than it's not like they're going to people are going to go and be like, you know, not avoiding one for the
no,
other.
I mean,
it's,
there's very yeah. little brand loyalty in craft beer like there is in the macros. Right. I was a diehard Miller Lite guy. I didn't drink Bud Light. Yeah. I drank Miller Lite unless I had to because that was the only thing that was available. But I don't think that carries over in craft beer. So people want to try more. They do food. We don't do food. They do different stuff than we do. So, it's been really nice for both of us.
That's awesome
to be over there.
I think we were kind of mean to them last week, weren't we? We were kind of crapping on the Half Acre tap room quite a bit. They're really nice guys. We like them a lot. And actually, Eric is going to be on the next podcast from Half Acre. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
We do our holiday party at Half Acre every year.
That's where we went. We actually went. This December for the beer tour, all the guides, we did the Half Acre thing and
at the new one
and
the food's really good.
Thanks for stopping by our tap
room. No, I don't think you guys were open.
we didn't open until December 16th.
Next year we'll be there. We'll be there for sure.
I waited till you were open to visit the Half Acre tap. I waited.
That was very nice of you.
Yeah. Because I'm a nice person, Bruce.
Can you pass me the Doppelbach? I gotta sweat this one out. But we found some dive bar up there that was glorious. It was one of those where you went in and you're like, this place shouldn't be open.
Do tell.
And there was like
Bobby's.
Must have been it.
What's it called?
I think it's Bobby's. It's on
Bobby's.
Oh, it was glorious. It was great. They were super nice.
There's not enough bars like that left in the city.
Yeah.
It's true. Is it because of all the tap rooms? I'm just kidding.
It was like,
wow, different customers. Different customers. No.
Well played.
I don't think people going for that experience are coming to our tap room for the same experience.
When we went in there, the regulars, it was like a father-daughter fighting. It was the greatest thing. I was like, I can't believe I'm seeing this. It was like being on an episode of Springer. You know, it was fantastic.
That's what Bowmanville is actually.
It's like an episode of Shameless.
There's the alibi. We need more alibis.
Yeah, we do.
The Bowmanville is kind of, I don't know if famous isn't the right word, but if you look at Bowmanville, it's five bars and no churches. And you're talking like 1.2 square miles or whatever it is. So it's kind of a great, and now two tap rooms and three if you count Empirical, which you should, even though it's technically across Foster. So it's a great neighborhood. And it is a neighborhood, that backs up into an industrial park. There's a big steel plant, next to us. And then obviously Half Acre. And then there's a couple other things behind us. But it's a cool, unique neighborhood. There's not really anything else like it.
Yeah.
And, they have like five bars, three breweries and still no churches. So, it's been good to us. Neighborhood's been very good to us.
Cool. Yeah, before you guys were, you know, you and Half Acre were there, I'd actually never even heard of that neighborhood. I mean, I'd been there, but I didn't know the name of it. You know?
I didn't either. I had to look it up, and then I was like, is this one of those real estate neighborhoods that, like, just all of a sudden pops up? But I don't think that's the case.
It's actually not. Yeah. I had never heard of it either, even when we were looking at the building. That's kind of between Andersonville and Lincoln Square, but there's a lot of property between those two neighborhoods. And this is carved out, just kind of backs up into the cemetery and Damon and Foster. And yeah, it's a cool little neighborhood.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah. Do you have future plans with the, anything you can tell us or?
Oh, sorry.
We're just kind of, we're open finally with the tap room. And I know that's been a hot topic. We're excited to be open and share our space. And I will say that we attract a different customer than the Corner Tavern, which was kind of lost in some of the reporting that's been out there. I think we still share from macro beers, but certainly not. We don't look at bars as our competition. I think it's a very different experience.
I don't think the macro or the dive bars aren't complaining. I think it's the beer bars, you know, and once again, I'm not complaining because my beer bar is doing very well. But, I think that the people that are kind of raising their hand going, wait a minute, you know, are the people who have always relied on having this killer beer selection to bring people in. And suddenly those people are just going straight to the source. And, it is what it is.
It is. But now those beer bars are also, now everyone's kind of bringing, as craft grows.
There's a multitude of reasons that
you can go to BW Threes or whatever that place is called and get crap. I think you can anyways. I haven't stepped foot in one of those in a long time.
No, you can go to TGI Fridays and get a decent beer, you know.
And that didn't used to be the case. I think that has more to do with it than anything else, is that the popularity of craft is just growing in general.
I mean, there's so many reasons. And also the fact that there's just more of everything, you know, not just tap rooms, but bars and restaurants. And you know, just came out again that Chicago is shrinking. You know, the numbers came in for 2017. We shrunk again. So the pie is getting smaller. And people are going to start clawing and grasping for, any reasons they can find for not doing well. But there's many reasons, you know. Right? I don't know.
I
do very, very good business with the tap rooms by Kaiser Tiger. And, it's kind of a symbiotic relationship I have with them. They come, people go over there and then they come here and vice versa and blah, blah, blah. Patty Long's doesn't really have a tap room near it, you know? So I don't know, you know. And, I don't know. It's people need to look within for the answers instead of, you know, blaming it on competition. But there's going to be some places closing, whether they're tap rooms or bars or restaurants or whatever.
Has to at some point.
Yeah, there's just too many of all of it. So, we can only sustain so many.
Mm-hmm.
We really brought this down.
Yeah, with that buzzer. Yeah. Hey, how about Sister Jean?
Drink some more of this Doppelbock.
Well, yes. Ramblers?
That's Ramblers. Right,
yeah.
Rambling on.
Yeah. Dude, I'm glad you guys are doing well because my team shit the bed.
Oh, who's your team?
Arizona. That's where I went. First round exit from them. That's unexcusable.
It's been a weird tournament.
It has. I mean, the thing is that when Virginia lost right after we lost, it was like, see, we're not the worst team.
Yeah, right, right.
They went down to a 16 seed first time ever.
That's an all-time,
I will say this. I had a bunch of buddies go down to the game in Dallas, and apparently there weren't a lot of other Loyola supporters at the game because they got more screen time. they got more screen time than the players. I mean, there was evidently no other section wearing gold and maroon to go to because they went to my buddies every time.
It looks like a bunch of Harry Potter fans. What's up with the scarves?
Oh, you know? It does kind of look like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's Gryffindor thing. The scarves, I think those were not around when I was in college. I'm not sure where they came from.
But, I think it's awesome. I mean, it's a good look, but it's
good
it's,
look yeah. for a Quidditch match.
Hey, it works.
I have so many like maroon and gold, pieces of apparel at home, it's just glad to have an opportunity to wear any of it.
Yeah, you're
right. Because normally those aren't my go-to colors
right.
for everyday wear. So anyway, I think it's the time in the podcast where we do our shameless plugs.
Yeah.
We will start with our very gracious guest, Jason. What is going on at Spiteful and what can we expect?
What do we have? Well, we can't wait to open the garage doors that face Balmoral because the weather finally turns to our favor.
No, it's still curling season, man.
It is, which is good for you. But we would like to open those doors up. We've been open for 3 months now, and we're just excited to have a space that people can come kind of get to know us, because Spiteful is very much us. It's not a story that we make up or a brand that we created to sell beer. It's us. It's who we are, and to welcome you into our home, so to speak, is very exciting. I think it's too early to plug our potential party, so I'm going to leave that to your guest next week, maybe.
Oh, you might be doing something with your neighbor?
A little joint?
It's possible.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Ooh, a little teaser.
I hate heard it. Doing that. I just didn't think first. Before I said.
No, I like it. Heard it here first on the Beer Opinions.
Yeah. We're looking to do, you know, some stuff at craft. It's not, what is it? It's Illinois Craft Beer.
Oh, yeah, they changed
this
it,
year.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, getting the whole state involved now.
Yeah, I know there's some mixed feelings about that, but...
Are people upset about it?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
People are real fired up.
I'm serious. On Twitter, there was some serious...
Really?
Yeah. Oh. And I kind of... I could see both sides, but to me, it's like it's a beer week. Let's celebrate it. So, yeah, we do have... Actually, I guess we have a bottle release coming up soon. Potentially next week. It's our Malevolence Chocolate Caliente. It's not the non-barrel aged version. So I guess that would be my shameless plug.
All right. Is that available around town or just at the pub?
It'll see distro.
Okay.
It's Bombers, but...
oh, yeah.
Get those Bombers.
It's Bombers, but yeah. That's we're too young to have an event schedule yet, so...
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Bruce, what's happening? You're waiting for the weather break too, I bet.
Yeah, man. We've got tours going. Saturday is going to have to brave some snow, it looks like. But, yeah. You know, it's the heavy, wet kind. It's lovely. But other than that, just rocking and rolling in all of our tours. So you can check us out at www.chicagobeerexperience.com. Boom.
Fantastic.
How about you?
I am going to shamelessly plug Patty Long's on... The 31st, March 31st, we have our KBS release.
Oh, ooh. I saw that. Yeah.
From Founders. It was still a good beer. And we have a 1/6 of the Canadian breakfast stout as well.
Ooh.
Which, yes, always good. So
you tap that right away, or are you doing a special time? Or
that's 7 o'clock.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah, 7 o'clock, March 31st at Patty Long's. Awesome. Yeah, should be great.
Awesome.
And... And of course, Loyola tonight.
I mean,
could you imagine them going to the Elite Eight?
I
don't know, man. I don't even want to think about it.
I'm gonna
just enjoy
for
the ride. Yeah. Like I've come to expect the Elite Eight, and I'm constantly disappointed.
I've thoroughly enjoyed the ride. Just ask my wife. She's like, "Is it over yet? Are we out yet?" She went there too. She doesn't seem to be as excited about it as I am.
Yeah. But did you do the good thing and fill out a bracket with them winning it all, even if the odds were against you?
You know, I did not, but a shout out to Boris down in New Orleans, who is a regular listener.
All right.
Not only did he pick Loyola to go all the way, but he hung it up behind his bar down there in the Mid-City Yacht Club, which is the home of Loyola basketball now in New Orleans, I guess. And
I love it. That's great.
And he sent me a picture after the last win. It was him and two other dudes who went to Loyola doing a shot of Malort after the victory. Yeah. So shout out to Boris. He did actually pay money to have a bracket with Loyola going all the way.
I always would do one with Arizona winning it.
Yeah.
At least one.
Yeah.
As long
as
your team makes it, you gotta
you have to have an emotional bracket.
You have to have
every year.
Yep.
I mean, this year I only had one, and that didn't go so well for me. So
I'm going to be...
I did have you guys going. Like,
oh, good.
I had you going not this far, but not losing right away.
I'm
going
to be rooting good for enough. You guys until you hit my Michigan Wolverines, and then I'm going to have to, you know, jump off back on that shift.
You know, let's not talk about that. We'll fight about that at Patty Long's if that happens.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening. I especially want to thank our guest, Jason Klein of Spiteful Brewing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it.
We know how busy your schedule is, and I'm, we're very appreciative you came down.
No, yeah, great to be here.
Awesome. So, everyone, tell your friends, tell everyone, Beer Opinions Podcast. It's beeropinions.co, apparently. I think for the last year I've been saying beeropinions.com.
We're supposed to ask for reviews. Please review us on iTunes.
Yeah. And apparently that helps.
Yeah, it helps a lot.
Unless you have a bad review, then keep that to yourself.
Yeah, only good ones. If you have a bad review, take it to some other beer podcast.
Take it to Yelp.
Take it to Yelp.
Yeah.
Somebody, you know.
At least they can't give you 0 stars on Yelp, right? If I could, I would. 1 star.
Yeah, so review us. Subscribe on iTunes. Boost that leadership. Share with your friends and family. Everybody.
All right.
All right.
Go Ramblers.
Go Ramblers.